Something to note, the story you're about to hear is not a direct retelling of any single myth about Santa Muerte. This episode has been based on historical research into Mexican culture and drawn from various interpretations of Santa Muerte in order to tell a compelling story about the folk saint of death. Hi, I'm Vanessa Richardson. Welcome to the Parcast original, Mythical Monsters. Each week, we explore mythology's most unsettling monstrosities to determine what makes them so terrifying. Today, we'll delve into the Mexican Queen of Death, Santa Muerte. Santa Muerte is a folk saint known as the champion of lost souls. Those who pray to Santa Muerte are granted what they desire without judgment, even if it's something as sinister as death itself. When you're done with this episode, head over to Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts to find more free episodes of Mythical Monsters and all other Parcast originals. Coming up, we'll dive into the dark magic of the Lady of Death.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement.
Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
Santa Muerte is a figure who first appeared in Spanish-controlled Mexico during the late 1700s. She has a plethora of monikers, including Skinny Lady, White Girl, Bony Lady, and the Pretty Girl, among others. Similar to her European counterpart, the Grim Reaper, she's often depicted as a skeleton wielding a scythe and holding a globe. Though she sometimes appears in a dark shroud, she's more frequently seen wearing a wedding dress or other feminine attire. Like the Grim Reaper, Santa Muerte meets recently deceased souls and guides them to the underworld. Those who worship Santa Muerte believe that, like death, there is no realm of our existence out of her reach. Santa Muerte devotee Tracy Rowland writes, "Her capacity to act is limited only by her devotee's capacity to ask. And unlike the judgmental saints of Catholicism, Santa Muerte is not concerned with morality. Death comes for us all, so it doesn't matter if her patrons pray for money, love, or even misfortune upon others. If their request is sincere, Santa Muerte will deliver." But this generosity does not come without a dark side. Just as easily as you can ask for harm to come to an enemy, someone can wish harm on you. Catholic studies scholar Professor R. Andrew Chestnut cites this as a daily fear of the working class in Mexico. He gives an example of a woman who frequently checks outside her door for signs of salt or graveyard dirt, both of which could indicate a hex from Santa Muerte on her home. Santa Muerte does not discriminate among her devotees or their wishes, but she does have one rule. If you make a promise to Santa Muerte, then you must keep your end of the bargain. If you renege on your vow, she could come for all that you hold dear. The bowl hit the ground. Its explosion echoed through the empty shop. Tepi waited, heart pounding. Then she heard her brother Quali calling to her from outside. He said, "Be careful in there." Tepi loudly shushed him and waited a moment longer. When she was sure no one was coming, she went back to her task, robbing this shop blind. She eyed the dusty merchant's shop hungrily, her eyes raking over the crowded shelves. She sprung into action. Tepe shoved pottery, metal scraps, candles, and trinkets into a big burlap sack until it bulged. It was a good haul. She paused briefly as she passed a stack of woven blankets. Her fingers gently stroked the fabric. She loved to weave, but never had enough material to make something so beautiful. Her mouth twisted bitterly. She grabbed a metal scrap and raked it through the weave, tearing a hole in the design. She chuckled softly. Now no one would have it. Quali suddenly called to her from outside. It was a warning. Someone was coming. Tepe burst from the back of the shop and grabbed her little brother's hand. But instead of taking off, she slowed their pace. They were young léperos, lowlifes. Even being out at night made them look guilty. She muttered to Quali, "Walk quickly, but not too quickly. Nothing more suspicious than a running lépero." The streets of Mexico City were deserted. In the distance, the looming National Palace towered above the low city buildings surrounding it. The sound of people approaching boomed through the quiet streets. She yanked Quali into an alley and put her finger to her lips. They flattened themselves against the wall as a group of five Spaniards stumbled by, nobles by the look of them, dressed in the finest fashions 1791 had to offer. They walked unsteadily, no doubt drunk off pulque. Tepe gazed at them resentfully. She would spend tonight trying to find a safe place to sleep while they were likely on their way to some mansion or feather bed. She felt a dull pain in her belly. It was a feeling she knew well. Jealousy. One particularly handsome noble stood out. He looked to be in his early 20s, not much older than Tepe herself. His three-piece suit was rumpled but ornately embroidered, and he had a carefree swagger. Tepe watched him with longing, imagining herself walking alongside him, covered in pearls and drunk off happiness. Quali took Tepe's hand and kissed it. He said, "You always tell me to dream big, but then I see how unhappy it makes you." She smiled sadly. He was so perceptive. The walking nobles kicked up dirt from the street as they passed. A dust cloud floated into Quali's face, and he coughed loudly. Tepe lunged to cover his mouth, but she was too late. The handsome noble looked toward the alley, and their eyes met. Tepe froze. He held her gaze for a long moment before continuing on with his comrades. She watched them go, her lips puckering in a pout. Less than an hour later, Quali and Tepe approached the small chapel at the edge of the city, stolen goods clutched in their hands. The windows before them glowed from firelight within. They had stayed here before when it was too cold for their usual spot under the bridge, but tonight it seemed they were not the only visitors. They stepped inside to see 10 men dancing around the small chapel. Their dark complexions were shiny with sweat, and they wore colorful loincloths. Tepe immediately recognized them as Chichimec nomads. They moved to a musicless beat, slurping from bowls full of thick liquid. One of the men held a whip and lashed it at a large cross above a candle-covered altar. Tepe's breath caught in her throat when she saw what sat before the altar. It was a skeleton, dressed in a bridal gown with a veil upon her head. She clutched a bouquet of flowers in her hands. The dancing nomads swirled around her. One of them beckoned her with a lopsided grin. Their energy was infectious. Tepe's foot slowly tapped to the rhythm of the dancers. A laugh bubbled from her chest. She yanked Quali towards the altar, but he pulled away and wrapped his arms around himself. Tepe gently slapped his cheek and said, "Stop worrying so much. We're safe and warm and have walked into a party." Tepi watched her brother retreat into a corner and draw his knees to his chest. He eyed the gathering with suspicion. Tepi sighed and turned back to the nomads, but they were no longer dancing. Instead, they stood very still, watching her. One of the men gestured to the skeleton at the altar and softly asked, "Would you like to ask Santa Muerte for a boon?" Tepi laughed. If skeletons or saints could grant wishes, she would be a rich woman by now. But when Tepi stepped toward Santa Muerte, a warmth spread through her, as if being wrapped in an invisible embrace. She felt a weight in her hand and looked down. One of the Chichimec had given her a candle. The wax was bright red. Tepi held up the light and wondered aloud if this Santa Muerte was in the habit of granting wishes to thieves. The Chichimec chuckled. Santa Muerte does not discriminate, just as death does not discriminate. If your need is true, you will receive it. Tepi wanted so many things, she could not put her desires into words. Unbidden, an image appeared in her mind. She saw the Spaniard from earlier that night, with his dashing smile and fine clothes. She imagined his strong arms pulling her into a loving embrace. Her lips prickled as she wondered how his kiss might feel. The candle's flame extinguished, and Tepi blinked, coming out of her trance. She shivered, realizing she was covered in cold sweat. The Chichimec beside her nodded and leaned forward to whisper, "Santa Muerte lives where you call her. Light a candle, red for love, white for purity, gold for money, and black for darker deeds. Hold what you want in your heart. You will have it." The Chichimec returned to their dancing, but Tepi felt numb. Her heart pounded. She could not seem to tear her eyes away from Santa Muerte's skeletal grin. The next day, Tepi and Quali departed the chapel for the market to barter their stolen goods. After hours of haggling, they managed to trade enough for a week's worth of food. As they were leaving, she felt a hand on her shoulder. She turned. The handsome noble stood before her, his eyes red from crying. A bouquet of flowers was clutched in his hand. Before Tepi could speak, he lunged. Tepi's cry was cut off as the Spaniard pulled her into a passionate kiss. Up next, Tepi discovers Santa Muerte's seemingly endless generosity.
Hey listeners, I want to take a quick moment to introduce you to the newest Parcast original on the block. It's called Incredible Feats, and it's a short weekday show hosted by comedian Dan Cummins. Every weekday, Dan shares a true account of physical strength, mental focus, or genuine bizarre behavior, going behind the scenes and into the achievements of world-class athletes like Dean Karnazes, who once ran for nearly 81 hours without stopping, and performance artists like Lucky Diamond Rich, who boasts layers of tattoos in the most unlikely places, and even everyday people thrown into extraordinary circumstances, like Juliana Kopka, who was forced to survive alone in a rainforest for 11 days. Incredible Feats is offbeat entertainment that's sometimes weird, sometimes wonderful, and always surprising. New episodes air daily, Monday through Friday. Search Incredible Feats and follow free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the story. Tepi could not believe her luck. The poor thief had been searching for a place to sleep when she stumbled upon a group of nomads worshiping a deathly saint called Santa Muerte. Tepi had never heard of her, but found herself standing before the altar, asking this saint of death for the attention of a wealthy Spaniard she had just seen. When Tepi saw the Spaniard the next day, she was caught off guard by a sudden, amorous gesture. Like many figures in folklore, no one knows the precise origin of Santa Muerte. The most popular theory is that she's the product of Catholic elements being integrated into ancient Aztec beliefs. The ancient Aztecs were the dominant power in Mesoamerica from the 13th century until the Spanish invaded in the 16th century. They built magnificent cities, developed political and educational systems, and underwent an impressive military expansion over much of the region. Their pantheon of gods was a huge part of their daily life, and death as well. In Aztec belief, the goddess Mictlantecuhtli is known as the Lady of the Dead. She reigns over the underworld, which they call Mictlan. Mictlantecuhtli is depicted with a skeletal face or wearing a skull mask and is connected to both death and resurrection. The Aztecs and indigenous tribes of Mexico would worship her during the summer. These rituals, full of dancing and music, are thought to be an early iteration of today's celebration, Día de Muertos, the Day of the Dead. The arrival of the Spanish in 1519 caused the destruction of the great Aztec civilization. These European interlopers brought death to the Aztecs, quite literally, but they also brought death personified in the Grim Reaper. The legend of the Grim Reaper emerged in Europe during the 14th century, when the region was ravaged by the Black Death. Death never felt more omnipresent across Europe, and the Grim Reaper's ominous robes and scythe embodied its horror. Theoretically, the Mesoamericans interpreted the Grim Reaper as a counterpart to their Lady Death, and the fusion gave birth to Santa Muerte. Author R. Andrew Chestnut notes of the Aztecs, "They took something foreign but familiar and made her holy." Mexico was successfully converted to Catholicism, but the conception of Santa Muerte shows that old traditions don't die off so easily. Instead, they tend to combine with the culture that intended to erase them. Tepi staggered back from the Spaniard, reeling. Her dry lips tingled from where he had kissed her. Her face was hot. She touched her cheeks with embarrassment. She must have been beet red. If the Spaniard noticed, he showed no sign of it. He tenderly touched her hand and apologized for his boldness. His name was Carlos. Quali pulled on her arm and Tepi looked around. People were staring. She stammered, "You should go. A noble shouldn't be seen with a lépero." Carlos replied, "I remember your dark eyes looking at me from the alley. When I awoke this morning, I could think of nothing else. Thank God I found you." Tepi's jaw dropped. It was not God that she would give thanks to. It was Santa Muerte. An incredulous Tepi allowed Carlos to call on her for the rest of the week. He brought her trinkets, food, and even paid for her and Quali to sleep at the Pulqueria, a tavern on the outskirts of the city. Tepi and Quali talked in hushed tones at night. They both agreed that if a wealthy Spaniard was paying attention to someone like her, a miracle had occurred. Tepi could not shake her giddiness. She thought of Carlos's kiss. She could still feel his touch where he brushed against her hand. But something nagged at the back of her mind. How long would it last? Carlos was just a man. The attention of men is fleeting, and so is their generosity. Tepi needed her own wealth. She was certain that Santa Muerte had given her this gift. If that was true, she wondered what else she was capable of. But Quali was scared. His eyes filled with fear each time they spoke of the saint of death. He told his sister, It is witchcraft, Tepi, black magic. It is not to be trusted. But Tepi was not about to listen to her little brother. Remembering the Chichimec's instructions, Tepi procured a gold candle from the always generous Carlos. The next night, she sat cross-legged on the floor of their room and lit the candle. Quali watched her suspiciously from his bed, eyes glinting in the shadows. Tepi closed her eyes and asked Santa Muerte for prosperity of her own. She imagined herself in a huge home with a shed brimming with weaving supplies. She smiled as she thought of herself as Tepi, the successful businesswoman, visiting the market as a vendor instead of a thief. She added, "And if you give me wealth, I swear I will set up an altar for you in my home, where it will stay until my dying day." Tepi felt that same warm feeling spread over her. She tilted her head back and gasped with excitement. Her heart thundered in her chest. The candle extinguished, though there was no wind in the room. Tepi opened her eyes to see Quali looking at her oddly. He remarked, "I hope you are able to keep that promise." Tepi pinched him and he yelped. Served him right for being so negative. Of course she would keep her promise. She would cut off a limb for Santa Muerte if that pile of bones gave her riches. Santa Muerte was quick with her blessings. The very next day, Tepi was miraculously handed a pile of weaving materials by a kind elderly woman at a market stall. The old woman gave no reason for her generosity and vanished into the crowd without another word. Tepi found a quiet corner and eagerly began to weave. Her fingers flew and an exquisite pattern emerged, which a passing noble bought on the spot. And so, her business was born. Soon, she had her own stall at the market and could barely keep up with the demand. She hired weavers and bought land to build a home. Carlos promised to wed her and spent many an evening in her new abode. They would stay up late, trading stories. Tepi soon forgot he'd been a gift from Santa Muerte. Every day, he felt more and more like hers. True to her word, she kept an altar for Santa Muerte. She added candles and offerings to it each month. Food, expensive jewelry, anything for the saint that had blessed her with such fortune. For there was little Tepi would not ask for. Good dreams, good weather, a competitor to fail. Santa Muerte never said no. But there was one thing Tepi kept untouched on her altar. The black candle. The Chichimec had warned her it was only to be lit for the darkest of deeds, and Tepi had no such evil want in her heart. Quali kept his distance. Tepi invited him to live with her many times, but he would not. She grew resentful at his constant refusals. He was jealous of her fortune, and if he could not find a way to be happy for her success, then she did not want to see him either. One evening, there was a knock at the door. Quali stood before her, face deathly serious. He spoke nervously. "It is Carlos. I have heard he has a wife. She lives in Spain, but she's come to Nueva España now, for good." Anger surged through Tepi. She bit her lip and glared at Quali. She whispered lethally, "You're just saying this to hurt me. Well, you have failed. Nothing can hurt me. Santa Muerte sees to that." She slammed the door in his face. Tepi leaned against the door. She put her palm to her chest as a sharp pain tore through it. It felt like her heart was being stabbed. She crumpled to the ground as sobs racked her body. She cried harder and harder until her weeping became a scream of rage. She ran to Santa Muerte's altar and knelt before the table to pray, but her eyes landed on the black candle. She snatched it up. Her shaky hands lit the unused white wick. Before she had even set it down, the prayer poured out. O most holy death, I call on you. I implore you that with your power, you remove Carlos's wife. As she finished, an unwelcome, fleeting thought entered her mind. They'd all be better off if his wife would just die. The candle went out. Her eyes followed the wick's wispy trail of smoke as it floated to the ceiling, her chest constricted with dread. She sat there for a long time, staring at the candle's burnt wick. With each minute that passed, her hope grew. Perhaps it was too dreadful a wish for her patron saint. The door flew open violently. Tepi turned to see Carlos standing there, silhouetted by the blue moonlight outside. He stepped through. The candlelight cast shadows about the room, making his shadow look like a dancing phantom. He stepped towards Tepi, reaching out, with hands that were covered in blood. Coming up, Tepi discovers the dark side of Santa Muerte's blessings. Now, back to the story. Tepi had thought the world was at her fingertips. She'd risen from a bitter, homeless thief to a well-regarded businesswoman with the help of her patron saint, Santa Muerte. When she discovered that her lover was married to another woman, she did not hesitate to ask Santa Muerte to fix it. But the saint of death's answer was darker than Tepi expected. When her lover appeared at her door, he had not just left his wife, he had killed her. Mexico was quick to incorporate Christian practices into their worship of Santa Muerte with devotional prayers and votive candles. But in the late 1700s, leaders of the Catholic Church decided Santa Muerte was becoming too popular for comfort. To them, she was a sinister image, aligned with poor communities and perpetual criminals. While worship of the folk saint did not mean an abandonment of Christian values, Santa Muerte provided something that Catholic saints did not. According to author R. Andrew Chestnut, most devotees feel far more comfortable asking the non-judgmental folk saint to perform decidedly un-Christian miracles. At the turn of the 19th century, the church rejected the folk saint of death and referred to her worshipers as cult members. Santa Muerte shrines were destroyed, and her worship shifted to secret vigils in the homes of her followers outside of the Catholic faith. Between 1800 and 1930, the presence of Santa Muerte all but vanished. Santa Muerte re-emerged in the mid-20th century, but her following surged in the early 2000s with the escalation of Mexico's drug war. With her loose morals, cartel members have adopted her as their patron saint. While most of her followers pray to the folk saint for protection and strength, worshippers like the Zetas cartel built shrines to Santa Muerte to destroy their enemies and protect their shipments. Dealers and suspected murderers are frequently arrested with Santa Muerte paraphernalia, like tattoos, engravings, or objects that bear her image. Because of Santa Muerte's popularity among society's outcasts, the Mexican government has joined the church in refusing to recognize Santa Muerte as a saint. Pope Francis himself dismissed her as a macabre symbol during a recent trip to Mexico. Tepi stared in disbelief at her lover's blood-soaked hands. The crimson stains were vibrant against his pale skin. A drop fell from his fingertips and hit the wood floor beneath him. She raised her gaze to meet his red-rimmed eyes. His face was slick with his tears, and snot coated his upper lip. She backed away. It was not fair. She had not asked for this. She slapped Carlos across the face. He fell to his knees, sobbing. Tepi slowly turned to the altar. The lively candle flames danced hauntingly, though there was no breeze. Her jaw clenched with anger. If Santa Muerte could make such a kind man kill, it made her wonder if he had ever really loved her at all. Perhaps he was just a pawn, bandied back and forth at Lady Death's whim. With a scream, Tepi swiped her arm across the table, knocking the candles and offerings onto the floor. Flames extinguished and bowls shattered. She stomped on the debris in a rage. Her foot slid on a pool of wet wax. She yelped as she fell to the ground with a thud. With a moan, she curled into a ball, crying. Santa Muerte had betrayed her. She felt Carlos's hands grab her arms and haul her to her feet. He said, "Mi amor, do not cry. Nothing stands in our way now." A loud knocking shook the door. Tepi shook him off and stumbled toward it, her trembling legs barely supporting her. She whispered hurriedly to Carlos, telling him to go clean up out back. As soon as he disappeared, she opened the door. Three officers strode into the home. They stopped at the sight of her. She looked down, seeing Carlos's bloody handprints visible on her arms. One of the officers shoved her into a chair and told her not to move. The others searched the house. Wind blew through the open door. Tepi turned to look at the altar's wreckage. The broken glass glinted. A slow dread washed over her. She had promised Santa Muerte she would always keep her altar, a promise that now lay literally broken before her. What had she done? All of a sudden, Carlos barreled through the house, making for the front door. He whipped past Tepi, and before she could call out to him, a gunshot went off, releasing a cloud of smoke into the room. Carlos crumpled in the doorway. Tepi screamed and rushed to him. She held his limp head in her hands, but she did not have time to cry. Crisp, smoky air stung Tepi's eyes. Something was burning. She staggered to her feet and walked outside to find her storage shed engulfed in flames. Tepi ran forward in a panic. A crowd had gathered behind her, but no one moved to help. They just stood, watching the destruction. Sparks jumped to her house, igniting its roof in moments. Tepi's mouth hung open in a silent scream, watching her livelihood, her home, and the remains of her lover all go up in flames. No. Tepi swallowed the sob that rose in her throat. She would not let this happen. Before she knew it, her feet were moving toward the flaming home. She had money in there, possessions. She had grown accustomed to this life of hers and would rather die than just watch it burn. Tepi stumbled through the smoky home, nearly tripping on Carlos's lifeless body. Soot stung her eyes and scratched at her windpipe, sending her into a coughing fit. A large chest sat in the corner, nearly obscured by smoke. She just had to get to it. As she passed the ruined altar, she squinted, sure that her eyes were deceiving her. A silhouette was visible through the smoke. The figure wore a tattered bridal gown and veil and stood with her back to Tepi. The bridal specter slowly turned, revealing her face. It was nothing but a skull. The smoke made the alabaster bone appear dusty and singed, and the black sockets where the eyes should be appeared endless. Santa Muerte. The urge to run left Tepi breathless, but her feet were rooted in place. She coughed as she yelled to the saint, "Why are you doing this to me?" Santa Muerte's skinless mouth did not move. She just stared at Tepi with her black, bottomless eyes. But Tepi heard her anyway. In a voice that echoed in her skull, Santa Muerte said, "I give much without asking anything in return, but a broken promise cannot go unpunished." Something grabbed Tepi's hand and squeezed. She turned to see Kuali, skin slick with sweat. He asked if she was all right. Tepi nodded. She turned to look back at Santa Muerte, but the Lady of Death was gone. Tepi burst from the inferno first, collapsing to the street in a fit of coughing. A look behind her revealed that her brother had not followed. She called for him, but she was drowned out by the roar of the flames. With a wail, the house collapsed in a giant, fiery heap. Through the fire, Santa Muerte's face appeared. Tepi staggered to her feet, but the Lady of Death was gone as quickly as she'd appeared. She called out for Kuali again. No answer. The crowd did not stir. Her body went numb with fear. The flames died, and Tepi was left staring at the pile of rubble that was once her home. She ran towards the hot ash, yelling her brother's name. She dug through the ruins, not caring that the debris singed her hands. Finally, she found him. Curled below where the altar had once been, his skin was blackened and split. Tepi sat beside him and cried until she could cry no more. When Tepi next opened her eyes, it was morning. She sat up and looked around. In the light of day, the damage was even more ruthless. Nothing had been spared. She hauled herself to her feet and took one last look at the body of her brother, but she had no more tears. She crawled out of her ruined fortune and stepped into the street. She strode away quickly, but not too quickly. Nothing worse than a running lépero. In addition to the renewed worship of Santa Muerte in Mexico, the mythical figure has also recently seen a resurgence in pop culture throughout North America. This includes appearances in the TV series Breaking Bad and Penny Dreadful. While much of Santa Muerte's resurgence in popularity is due to the criminal world's adoration, she does appeal to marginalized groups across the world. The LGBTQ+ community have become ardent supporters of the folk saint. Persecuted and frequently spurned by the Catholic Church, LGBTQ+ followers have run into Santa Muerte's open arms. In the UK, United States, and the Philippines in particular, the majority of the Santa Muerte movement's leaders are gay men. To the Mexican people, death is not always something to fear. The Day of the Dead is an annual celebration of death and an honoring of past loved ones. But outside of Mexico and in much of the Western world, death can be terrifying. Santa Muerte is literally a reminder of our mortality. It doesn't matter who you are, Santa Muerte will come for you in the end. To embrace Santa Muerte is to come to terms with the inevitability of death. As Mexican writer, poet, and diplomat Octavio Paz wrote, "The cult of life, if it is truly profound and total, is also the cult of death, because the two are inseparable. A civilization that denies death ends by denying life." Thanks for listening to Mythical Monsters. We'll be back next week with a new episode. For more information on Santa Muerte, amongst the many sources we used, we found Devoted to Death, Santa Muerte, the Skeleton Saint, by R. Andrew Chestnut, extremely helpful to our research. You can find all episodes of Mythical Monsters and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Mythical Monsters, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Mythical Monsters on Spotify, just open the app and type Mythical Monsters in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. I'll see you next time. Mythical Monsters was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound design by Brian Golub, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Aaron Larson. This episode of Mythical Monsters was written by Kate Murdoch, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Hey, Parcasters. Don't forget to check out the brand new Spotify original from Parcast, Incredible Feats. Join host Dan Cummins as he explores true accounts of weird, wonderful, and all-out wild achievements. New episodes premiere daily Monday through Friday. Search Incredible Feats and follow free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.